things about working on target spot, one of the disconcerting things about working on target spot is the fact that it showed up in a very specific, restricted region of the country, in the Cotton Belt to begin with, which makes it difficult to work with. But one of the nice things was that it occurred across state lines, and so between Florida, Auburn, and the University of Georgia, we've had a chance to work and cooperate on this. No one has done more work on this, in certainly in the Southeast, than Dr. Austin Hagen, and he'll now present his work, Target Spot Management Options in Alabama.
Bob and I didn't coordinate our presentations, but actually we're going to touch on some different things, because I've done some other types of work over in Alabama, and we've had a little bit different situation, because our cotton production goes from the Gulf Coast all the way up to the Tennessee border, and it's not all the same from top to bottom. As Bob mentioned, the disease showed up in 2003, 2005 in southwest Georgia. It showed up in Alabama in 2011. That's when we confirmed that we had target spot in cotton in central and south Alabama. In 2012, it went up the East Coast, probably as a result of two tropical storms that moved in that area. They had a lot of rainfall and high temperatures. It showed up in samples out of Louisiana. I know Tom Allen had a fungicide trial in 2012, and then it showed up in Arkansas this past year, and I'm not quite sure about Tennessee. So basically, other than the Boot Hill of Missouri, it's shown up everywhere in the Southeast. And Bob's already mentioned the host range of this fungus, and the real main concern is soybeans. I don't know if John Mueller's in here or not, but he told they didn't have any soybean rust in their soybeans this year. Their main disease problem in soybean was target spot. So there's a possibility it may be jumping back and forth between two hosts. The question about target spot is whether or not it has an impact on yield. And it's very hard to generate information on this particular topic. And there's a series of studies done in 2012 and 13 where I used different numbers of applications of headline in order to try and generate different levels of disease, and did it in two different varieties, phytogen 499 and a deltapine variety. And this is just the information from 2012. We generated earlier this year some curvilinear curves rather than the linear regression we did last year, and so it cuts some of the yield loss out. And there is some estimation in the yields, because even with five fungicide applications, we cannot get a very high a level of control as I would like to see in these trials. So essentially, on 499, we had a significant reduction in yield when we looked at the equation, and it looks like about a 1,000-pound loss in seed cotton yields on a per acre basis. Now, last year on the DPL 1050, we did not get a significant yield reduction. There probably is a reduction as the disease intensified, was significantly different. But so is a lower loss on DPL 1050, though, than on 1252. And then if you go to 2013, we changed to deltapine 1252 away from 1050, mainly because 1050 is going out, and essentially saw on the 499 about the same level of yield loss as we saw the year before, or estimated. And the estimated yield loss was a little bit lower on the 1252 than it was on 499, but there was a significant yield loss as disease intensified at this location. So now Fairhope is down in Baldwin County, which is probably, as far as humidity and temperature, among the hottest places and wettest places in the state. So it's an ideal environment for target spot development. So it looks like at this point in time, depending on the variety and location in the state of Alabama, you may see up to a 400-pound total loss from target spot in cotton. And there's possible, we haven't been able to actually get up to, say, a 4 bale yield potential, so it may actually be higher. We're hovering somewhere around 3 bales at this point in time. There was a question about when does disease appear. It's in the plots that we rate at Fairhope, it usually shows up the fourth week in July. There are some leaf spot diseases that, particularly in 2013, that show up earlier in the year, where there was a great deal of Ascochyta in June and into the early July in our cotton. And without a microscope, I couldn't tell the difference between Ascochyta and target spot. The Ascochyta had a ring pattern. We also had Myrothecium leaf spot at this in Fairhope, and it has virtually identical symptoms. So visually, they're very difficult to tell apart. But the disease develops at the end of July. You have a rapid increase in leaf spotting and defoliation through about the first week in September. It seems like at that point in time, we have a change in weather patterns. We go from a particularly really moist air mass to a drier one. The temperatures at night go down, and the disease pretty well stops spreading at that point in time. So in summary, the fungus from the Jones paper, he mentioned that the fungus survives on crop debris. It definitely is a moisture and heat-driven disease. In 2013, we had a lot more rain than we had in 2012. So up front, I would have expected to have seen a lot more target spot in cotton than I actually saw. The ratings were actually a little lower in 13 and 12. And the difference may be the temperatures were much lower in 2013 because of the cloud cover and rainfall than they were in 2012. So that may be an issue. The disease certainly accelerates in development after canopy closure. As Bob mentioned, it looks like it's a disease of intensively managed cotton. If you go up in the sand hills of South Alabama where they can grow bale and a half cotton on these deep sands, the target spot is not going to be an issue there. This is an issue for the guys that are pushing the yield envelope. One other thing that showed up this year, you know, you always have little accidents in your field trials. There were a number of them at another location, Headland in southeast Alabama, where we planted later. We weren't in there in the early May. We actually got in there in June. And in June, planted cotton, there's a lot less target spot. More than likely because it's maturing at a time of the year when the temperatures are lower and the moisture is much, relative humidity is much lower. So there may be the possibility in some situations of simply avoiding the disease altogether. There are some unknowns that we're trying to deal with. We really don't know what the yield loss mechanism is. Bob had one slide where he actually was showing a defined yield loss for some of the varieties that they're looking at. We have not generated that information in Alabama at this point in time. That something's going to go on next year. If you look at target spot and you think about the type of fungus that we're dealing with, you would think that crop rotation is going to be critical. We do have some rotation studies in place, particularly one in Headland, and so far it really doesn't seem to be that much of a factor. Now we'll see what happens in the future. Again, tillage, I think, I think if you are planting no-till cotton behind no-till cotton, you're probably asking for trouble. But if you're planting cotton behind corn, I don't think it's going to be an issue, or peanuts. So tillage in itself may not be the issue. It may go back to rotation. Irrigation is a driver. And it may also be some importance on geographic location, because based on what we saw in 2013, the further north you got in Alabama, the less of an issue target spot became. To the point in the Tennessee Valley that we had some leaf spotting and a very low level of leaf shed in a few trials up there, and virtually none in others. So this may be a disease of the southern cotton production range rather than further north. So we're looking at the main management options we have at the moment are variety and fungicide. There are differences in the amount of defoliation that you see among varieties. This data is just from 2012, up to 80% defoliation the second week in September. So that's about 10 weeks post first bloom. From these types of trials, though, you can't really generate any idea of what impact the disease is having on yield because we don't have the proper controls in them, but at least it gives us an idea as to which ones are showing more defoliation. And this one is a test in central Alabama from 2013, and again, there's a wide range of defoliation. But you'll also notice who's sitting on top of the heap as far as yield is concerned. It's 499. So even though it had a high level of defoliation, it still has an exceptionally high yield potential, and if the disease doesn't hurt it too much, it's still going to end up on top of the pile. And down at the bottom, we did have a split plot design where we had a fungicide treatment on these, and it certainly got a reduction in defoliation, and also it looks like bulb counts may be what we're looking at as far as where the yield reduction has come, but it didn't result in a statistical increase in yield, which is something that Bob has run into as well. So when you look at variety selection, there is a difference in the reaction of the varieties as far as the level of defoliation, with 499 tending to have more defoliation. But there's kind of a risk-reward situation here, because if you can keep the disease off the 499, it's going to yield very well. The DPL, Stoneville, and Fibromac varieties also get damaged by target spot, but maybe not as much. But under the right conditions, particularly down in southwest Alabama, they're probably going to suffer some yield losses as well, though maybe they won't be as high as they are in some of the other varieties. But there's certainly no variety out there in the marketplace that I would consider to have a high level of resistance. So growers do have the option of growing, we'll call it a more tolerant variety that does not suffer as much defoliation. But in making the decision on what variety they want to grow, they also have to look at their other situations, and particularly yield potential comes into play. These are the fungicides that are labeled. Mainly we're looking at applications, as Bob said, at first and third week of bloom is the timing that's basically on the label. The other option is at first sign of disease, maybe made as a result of scouting. I think a lot of folks are out in cotton at this time of the year looking for stink bugs. So it's not that much of a stretch that they could go out there and also look for target spot as they're scouting for the stink bugs. Fungicides, as Bob mentioned, they don't work real well. I mean, I work in peanuts, and when a fungicide works well, when we're at digging time, there ain't a spot on those plants, basically. That's what we want to find, and that's not the situation we run into. Even with five applications of headline, I haven't been able to do that. What they do is they slow the disease down sufficiently for the crop to mature. That's all we want it to do, is just slow it down, and that's essentially what they do. I'll figure this thing out. This is from 2012, just showing some differences with the variety. We had two varieties in the test. The 1050 had less defoliation. When you compare it with the 499, they had similar yields. With the fungicides, this is pooled data over the two varieties. There really wasn't any difference in the amount of defoliation that we observed. The only product that significantly increased yield over the non-treated check was headline at 9 fluid ounces. This is another test for 2013 at the Fairhope location. Again, there's three applications of twin line and quadras, two applications of headline. I probably shouldn't have done that. But anyway, there was, again, very little difference in defoliation among the fungicide treatments. There was a significant interaction when we dealt with yield response among the varieties. With 499, we had the best yield gains with the twin line products, and it was about 700 pounds of seed cotton per acre, which translates into about 300 pounds per acre of lint. And actually, the treatment I was most disappointed with was the 9 fluid ounces of headline. It statistically didn't differ from the control. And we did get a yield gain with both rates of quadras on 499 as well. If you look at the 1252, the yields are generally higher, particularly for the non-treated control in comparison with 499. The yield differences among treatments are not as great, and the only treatment that where we saw a significant yield gain here was with quadras at 9 fluid ounces. The others were no different. Bob mentioned timing, and he had a timing test. I had one too. This was on 499, again on 1252. We had pinhead squared, a two-week treatment, a second and fourth week of bloom. It was supposed to be first and third, but it was raining a lot. Fourth and sixth week, sixth and eighth week. Now, the fourth and sixth week would correspond to an on-demand treatment based on scouting. In other words, you finally saw leaf spotting in the canopy, triggered the spray. The sixth and eighth week would correspond to a rescue treatment. You found defoliation and you're coming in based on that observation, scouting observation, and going ahead and make a fungicide application. The bottom two treatments are what we call positive controls. It's five applications of Bravo Weather Stick, which is not labeled in cotton, doesn't have a tolerance, but it is used for target spot control in tomatoes. So we wanted to see if it worked. And then the real positive control was Bravo and Headline tank mix combination applied five times. And if you look at the 499, you can see that other than the early application and the recommended scheduling, we didn't get a reduction in the amount of defoliation. But when we went to the scouting-based schedule and the rescue treatment, they actually did reduce the amount of defoliation. And then there's those two positive controls down there. They really didn't improve or didn't reduce defoliation that much more from the two spray programs. On the DPL 1252, we did not get a reduction in disease with the two earlier programs. We did with the two later programs, same thing we saw on the 499. And then the full season programs were down there in the middle. There's total disease there. It continued to go down with the number of increase in the number of applications. But if you looked at yield response, those two early, recommended in the early schedule, did not boost yields, but the two later spray programs did, as did the five spray application positive controls. So it looks like in an ideal situation, in an area where you're likely to have a lot of disease pressure on a variety like 499, you might see a 300-pound yield boost from fungicide treatment, lint cotton. As Bob said, more than likely it's going to be in the 100 to 150-pound per acre range from what we've seen in our trials. Did look at fungicide efficacy as impacted by fungicide placement. We used some drop nozzle rig on a high boy at one location and a spider sprayer at another. At one of the locations here in central Alabama, the broadcast and the drops, it didn't make any difference. So trying to get in the fungicide from the side and get better coverage of the leaves really did not result, at least at the end of the season, in a reduction in defoliation. It didn't make any difference on total disease that we saw over the season. Didn't make any difference on the number of balls out there. It didn't make no statistical difference in yield. If you look at the fungicides, we used Headline and Quadras at 9 fluid ounces. Both of them reduced the amount of defoliation compared with the control. If you look at total disease, the Headline was a little better over that 5 or 6 week disease development period than was the Quadras, but both of them worked. We had an increase in the number of bulls with Headline, not with Quadras, but both of them increased yield when compared with the non-treated control. So if you look at a fungicide use, irrigated cotton where you have a higher yield potential, you're probably more likely to see a yield gain from a fungicide. Same things with Bob said. If you're looking at dryland cotton, you probably want to scout them. Maybe if we get a little more information on the on-demand programs or scouting programs, that's probably the way to go. But certainly the field's probably going to need a two and a half bale yield potential in order to justify the use of a fungicide. But you have to look at variety selection, stand density, yield potential, and location as to whether or not to make that treatment decision. And of course, the other is to watch the weather, as this disease is really driven by weather. But it's really, if you have a lot of rain and you're irrigating and it's hot, it's going to go. these are just the standard program for using the fungicides. And I said, if we get a little more information, the on-demand scouting programs work, maybe that's the way to go for most growers. And there is the possibility that those rescue treatments might work as well. If you look at, and I'm talking about Alabama, if you look at the state of Alabama, maybe extended into other states, there's a really high-risk zone in cotton grown along the south coast and then maybe over to the Atlantic coast. Probably where we have the best combination of weather patterns in for target spot development. If you get into a little further north, maybe we're in an area where we primarily could look at scouting cotton and then scheduling treatments based on risk rather than a calendar program. And then when you get up north in the Tennessee Valley, for example, I mean, you could certainly scout for the disease, but odds are in those areas, it's unlikely unless we have a hurricane at the right time of the year that we're going to be needing any fungicide treatments in those areas. And Bob already mentioned his risk index, a nice way to give a grower an idea as to what risk he might face from the disease. But there's still a lot more questions that we need to answer about target spot than we've generated. You know, we've only really been doing this for 2 years. I've initiated what it could best be described as a shotgun research proposal over the state of Alabama. And hopefully by doing trials over a wide area, a large number of them, we'll be able to generate the information we need in order to tell the growers how to best manage this disease. Thank you.
We've got plenty of time for questions. You got questions for Austin? Just because he's from Auburn, don't have any sympathy on him today. He won't give you sympathy tomorrow, I assure you. So, questions on the target spot?
They're all hungry. They won't eat lunch. I know what it's like to be last on the schedule.
Bob,
Jack.
My area down there, we found the target spot way back out there. We've seen years, but some people had worse problems with it, seemed like a little farther south. And this year, it's right about the heat because we sprayed it. It's hard to see any difference between our yield difference where we sprayed and where we didn't. But we have seen the variety. I look at it as target spot in both varieties, but there's definitely more in some varieties than others. But our cotton being mostly either 499, but coming over where most of it's 1252, dry land 1050. And we are high yield, and 60% irrigated. How would you position the fungicide spray? Second, third?
If I had the situation that you're talking about, then I think from our data we've been looking at so far is, one, you're going to look at your highest value crop, you're going to look at your greatest yield potential, you're going to look at your rankest growth, and then for us, you're going to look, I think it's critical to get that timing out somewhere between the first and third. I think it's not only the disease coming in then, but you have the best opportunity before the canopy gets too close, get your good coverage. Which is basically what Austin was saying as well. But certainly, dry land cotton with poor growth or less growth and your canopy's not covering, much more difficult to make a recommendation to invest in a fungicide over perhaps something else to enhance growth. Other questions? Critique. A critique on that. I mean, this is obviously Dr. Crawford, you were a cotton specialist for a number of years in Georgia, and this is something I don't guess you saw. What's your perspective coming in from the history of it? Any thoughts or?
Just put him on the spot.
It was certainly, but you did not see the disease when you were the cotton specialist at the time, is that right?
Yeah.
So obviously something we're trying to deal with now. Other questions, comments? Could you repeat that one more time? The question, is there a link between target spot and nematodes? And I would say that there's been some observations where you have greater stress, perhaps caused by nematode. There's been some just observations that they've also seen the target spot and some of this more in those areas, but as far as any replicated studies, I don't know of anything.
In our rotation study at Headland, we got a lot of root knot pressure this past year or two, and actually it seems like, well, as I said, we're not seeing a rotational effect, and my guess would be that where the root knot is present, we're getting a lot less plant growth, and the plants are not covering over the row middles like we would expect them to, even though we're irrigating the cotton. And so I would think if you have severe root knot, it's actually going to reduce the amount of damage. The other part, it's going to reduce yield potential, so you're more than likely you're wasting a fungicide application in those situations.
I want to thank you again for being here this morning, and our session will resume at 2 o'clock at different locations. Thank you.